This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. November is Men's Health Awareness Month, so Talkspace wants guys to know that being prepared for life's biggest challenges and opportunities means prioritizing mental health, too. Talkspace can help you go beyond fine-tuned workouts, supplements, and productivity hacks. Talkspace can help you fine-tune your inner life so you can succeed in being the best version of yourself in any situation. And with Talkspace, you can get therapy from anywhere and on your time. You can even text your therapist between sessions. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace takes most insurance, and most insured members have a $0 copay. Men's Health Awareness Month is the perfect time to reach out to Talkspace. Now, get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com. That's Talkspace.com, promo code SPACE80.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of DD Geopolitics. I am one of your hosts. The other host this time is in Moscow or something.
That's right. That's right.
Home in Moscow. We have a quick episode today. We're going to get started. We are honored to be joined once again by Dan Kowalik, human rights attorney, labor rights advocate, and one of the most fearless voices exposing U.S. foreign policy hypocrisy. Recently released Syria Anatomy of Regime Change, which I have purchased and read and recommended to everybody, and will be stuffing stockings with it. And he's now today joining us as the new attorney for President of Colombia, Gustavo Petro, in the United States. So welcome and congratulations on your new gig.
Welcome, Dan. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Really, I enjoy talking to both of you. And I dress for the occasion.
You need your hat.
I love it.
So there you go.
I have a clip just to get our viewers warmed up. We love our Latin American leaders. We play them every week here. We'll have a short clip of get our viewers in the mood.
No hay raza superior, señores. No hay pueblo elegido de Dios. No lo es ni Estados Unidos ni Israel. Ignorantes fundamentalistas de extrema derecha piensan así. El pueblo elegido de Dios es la humanidad toda.
How did this come about? How were like, I'm just so excited to hear about how you and Gustavo were a match made in heaven. Last I saw Gustavo was on the streets of New York City with, I think it was Roger Waters.
I think that's kind of what got him into hot water with Trump, you know, amongst many other things. But anyways, I've known Gustavo Petro for about 20 years. I knew him when he was a senator, when he was a mayor of Bogota. He and I were involved in the same struggle at the same time when he was a senator. He really made his kind of career as a politician exposing what was then known as the parapolitical scandal, the scandal mm-hmm. of the government, many government officials, and the military being embedded with the paramilitary death squads. Mm. And he was the main figure in the Senate that was exposing this publicly at great risk to himself, as you can imagine. And at that time, I also was involved in the U.S. advocating for Colombian workers. At that time, Colombia was the most dangerous country in the world to be a trade unionist. Year after year, you had more than 200 trade union assassinations in Colombia. This was staggering, staggering numbers we're talking about. I think when all said, about 4,000 trade union members and leaders were killed. I mean, this is a staggering thing. I was working at the steelworkers, and so I was publicly denouncing that and also the paramilitaries and the connection between the military and paramilitaries, because the U.S. at that time was giving record funding to Colombia as part of Plan Colombia, though in Colombia they call it Plan DC or Plan Washington, via which the U.S. sent about $10 billion in military assistance to Colombia under the guise of fighting drugs, but really it was to fight the social movements And if you allow me a little history.
Please, because my next question was going to be, can you tell the viewers a little bit about the history as well as Plan Colombia? So please, you're already ahead of me.
Well, we have to go back to 1962 and John F. Kennedy's so-called national security doctrine, which had, as usual, nothing to do with national security and everything to do with fighting social movements in Latin America, including by murdering trade union leaders, Catholic priests who advocated for liberation theology, indigenous leaders, etc. In fact, and I used to write a lot about this, not so much now, but I spent many years writing a lot about this. And as Noam Chomsky says, there was a direct cause and effect between Vatican II and the national security doctrine, that the U.S. was very threatened by the burgeoning philosophy of liberation theology because it was inspiring revolutions in Latin America. And so they created this national security doctrine. There was a General Yarborough who was kind of the intellectual author of it. And the epicenter of the national security doctrine was Colombia. This was where they first began implementing it. And as General William Yarborough said, a key component to it were paramilitary groups that could carry out atrocities with some deniability on the part of the government itself. So a lot of people talk about the Salvador Doctrine. And when they talk about the Salvador Doctrine, they're talking about the Death Squad Doctrine, which was used in El Salvador, used even before that in Vietnam, used again in Iraq. But it really was begun in Colombia in 1962. And the paramilitaries have been a problem to a lesser or greater degree since that time, even to this day. And essentially, they're, you know, military people who during the day and at night they go out as paramilitaries and again can't commit these atrocities to destroy social movements. And Plan Colombia was really, you know, an extension of this at a time, you know, when the U.S. had its designs on trying to control the situation in Colombia and in Latin America. So this was Bill Clinton's plan, the Plan Colombia. And again, as everyone recognized, even the White House, year after year, there was no diminution at all in the drug trade from Colombia during this time. The $10 billion didn't buy us anything in terms of that. But it did buy, you know, a real but not total of the social movement, because it's the social movements that would eventually bring Gustavo Petro and his vice president, who's an Afro-Colombian, Francia Marquez, to power. So I was very involved in advocating against Plan Colombia from its very inception back in 1989. And that's how I got to know Gustavo Petro. That's the long explanation.
Amazing. Amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a fantastic story. So I do have this other clip of Gustavo Petro, and I want you to comment on that.
Él es el responsable de haber desatado una política que llevaba a millones de venezolanos fuera, y ahora entonces saca a los venezolanos a la fuerza a rajo y a patadas. Y eso no se hace. Pero el primer responsable se llama el señor Trump, y hay que decirlo. No, señor, Boomerang en la política.
El señor Trump lleva 9 meses en el poder de este gobierno.
El señor Trump gobernó antes, amigo. Sí, póngale el primer gobierno y vea lo que pasó allí. Casi que hay guerra entre Colombia y Venezuela.
Trump,
le da rabia al señor Trump que yo no apoye a los norteamericanos con el ejército colombiano para invadir Venezuela. No, señor. ¿A qué estúpido colombiano se le puede ocurrir ayudar a invadir donde están sus primos, sus sobrinos, su gente colombiana, que hay 4 millones, para que los maten como en Gaza?
I love him. That is one of my favorite clips of him. He's
an amazing guy.
So fantastic. Well, I wanted to ask you as well, in terms of Trump's first term, if we could also add this in, wasn't there an executive order or some sort of something at the end of his first term stating that Venezuelans could not be deported from the United States?
I don't recall that, to be honest. I don't recall that certain thing, but I can talk about the immigration issues between Colombia and Venezuela, which are very important and which Petro talks about. So, during the dirty war in Colombia, which lasted a long time, and again, in which hundreds of thousands of people were killed, you did have a mass migration from Colombia to Venezuela, in which millions of Colombians went there, and they were given citizenship. A very significant percentage of the Venezuelan population is from Colombia. Now, then when the U.S. started sanctioning Venezuela and destroying its economy, you had a lot of Venezuelans who then crossed into Colombia in the millions. So you have this real cross-pollinization, you know, in which, you know, again, the Venezuelans and Colombians, he calls them cousins. They're really brothers and sisters. And when Simon Bolivar, when he liberated, you know, that part of South America, Colombia and Venezuela were key parts of that liberation, right? And his idea was to make a unified state in the Andean region of South America, which never happened. But, you know, those people have a natural fraternity. By the way, I was at Petro's inauguration. He did something amazing. So the sword of Bolivar is in the museum, in a museum in Colombia, in Bogota. So during his inauguration, he called for some soldiers to go and procure the sword of Bolivar, which he raised during his inauguration, which was pretty incredible. So he's a really neat guy. But so, you know, there are certainly tensions between Venezuela and Colombia because of migration issues, because the U.S. has been trying to put them at odds with one another. But really, you know, there are countries that naturally would be at peace with one another. So as Petro says, he's not going to help with an invasion of Venezuela. And that is a big issue for Trump. That's one of the reasons Trump wants to destroy him. And by the way, the last invasion, that the major U.S. invasion the U.S. had in this hemisphere, was in Panama in 1989, ostensibly to take out Manuel Noriega. In that case, they said because he was a drug trafficker, which actually was true in that case, not in Petro's case, but in Noriega's case. But that's because he was helping the CIA run drugs, right?
Exactly.
So the problem there, even, you know, even though he was doing it, but that wasn't the issue. The issue was that he didn't want to help anymore with be a staging ground for the Contras. That was his big sin. And so George H.W. Bush sent in an invasion force which killed hundreds to thousands of working class people in Panama City. This is a war people don't remember. I mean, even when George H.W. Bush died several years ago, I noted in his bios that were, you know, given out on NPR and others, they rarely mentioned this little episode. But the point is, that invasion was spurred on by a leader who would not go, you know, would not go along with U.S. intervention efforts in a neighboring country, in this case, Nicaragua. And that's one big reason the U.S. is opposed to Petro now. But of course, the other big issue being the one that you, you know, raised at the very beginning of this episode, and that is his support for the Palestinian people and his opposition to the war in Gaza. So so now they put him on this OFAC list, he and his wife and his son. And, you know, I think this is a probably the first shot across the bow against Petro and against Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
So the sanctions are against his wife and son as well, and they're also being sanctioned for illicit drugs?
Yeah, which is just, it's silliness, except that it has real consequences. All their accounts have been frozen in Colombia. In fact, they don't know how they're going to pay for their daughter's education because they can't access funds they have, you know. And even travel is very difficult because if you're on an airline, not even a U.S. airline, but a foreign airline that does business with the U.S., that company can be sanctioned if they allow you to fly on their airline. Okay, so this thing has a cascading effect. This is why people say, point out that these sanctions, why they claim to be targeted.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. November is Men's Health Awareness Month, so Talkspace wants guys to know that being prepared for life's biggest challenges and opportunities means prioritizing mental health, too. Talkspace can help you go beyond fine-tuned workouts, supplements, and productivity hacks. Talkspace can help you fine-tune your inner life so you can succeed in being the best version of yourself in any situation. And with Talkspace, you can get therapy from anywhere and on your time. You can even text your therapist between sessions. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace takes most insurance, and most insured members have a $0 copay. Men's Health Awareness Month is the perfect time to reach out to Talkspace. Now, get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com. That's Talkspace.com, promo code SPACE80.
Targeted at individuals. They're not targeted. Because basically everything that Petro touches is at risk of being sanctioned. And he's president of the Colombia. So his reach is pretty long and extensive, right? So, you know, I was talking to another lawyer who's an expert on OFAC today, and he said, you know, this could lead to the sanctioning of Colombia's oil industry, of other industries. The next move may be higher tariffs against Colombia. Colombia actually has preferred trade status with the U.S., under the Colombia Free Trade Agreement. I think right now their tariff is at 10%, which I think is about as low as you're going to get with Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And so there's fear that's going to be raised. So, I mean, this is not just an attack against Petro. It really is against the entire country. And at a very key moment because there are elections coming up in May.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Petro cannot run again under the Constitution. You cannot serve two consecutive terms. But they just voted on Sunday. The Colombian poll party, which is really a coalition of parties, voted for the person to run as president for them to succeed Petro. And it's Ivan Cepeda, who is in the Communist Party of Colombia. Mm-hmm. Whose father was a communist leader who was murdered by the death squad. The U.S. does not want him to be the next president of Colombia for certain. You know, so there's a lot at stake here, and all these things are being timed to certainly interfere in the elections and to punish Colombia for not playing ball with the U.S. The other thing, again, in terms of timing, Petro just announced within the last week or so that Colombia would end its partnership with NATO, which was strange enough anyway, right? NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, last I looked on a map, Colombia is not in the North Atlantic. So this was strange to begin with, but that shows how close of a military partner Colombia has been with the United States. And that partnership began before Petro became president, and he announced recently that's over. So another strike against him. So all this is calculated to go after a leader that is unwilling to bow to the United States and also to bow to Israel, you know. And so Petro has put himself in great peril through his independence. But God bless him for doing that. I mean, yeah, obviously he's doing the right thing. And I'm very proud to represent him for that reason. I mean, he's, you know, he'll go down as one of the great leaders of history, I think, you know. But you pay a price for that a lot. So
let me ask you, Dan, just real quick, is this OFAC designation going to follow him outside of his presidency? Like, is this something permanent unless he's able to overcome it in a legal or diplomatic way?
Yes, he's on it as an individual.
Okay.
And so, yes, unless we can successfully challenge it, he will remain on it. And by the way, it can take 14 years to challenge these things. So, you know, even if we're successful, it could stay with him for a long time. So it's a very serious thing, you know, very serious thing.
Absolutely.
Well, despite the sanctions, Petro's still traveling. He recently said that the Arabs love me because I am so transparent about my support for Palestine. And yesterday he did this. So Petro landed in Saudi, and I thought that it was interesting, given everything that's happening in Gaza, and now with kind of Colombia being declared somewhat of an enemy of the United States, these sort of lines being drawn. I thought it was interesting for a trip to Saudi amidst all of this. Can you tell us anything about the trip to Saudi, what was talked about, and what the purpose was?
I know that they did commence some sort of trade deal. I think that was the big reason he went there. I didn't follow it very closely, I'll be honest, because I'm really focused on this OFAC thing right now. I mean, I'm on the phone. I've been on the phone, you know, all day, you know, for the last days about this. So I haven't really focused on it. I just know that they completed a big deal where Saudi Arabia is going to purchase something from Colombia again. I don't even remember what. So. I didn't focus on it. You got me there.
So. Well, I'm going to pass it off to Chris because Chris was literally just in Venezuela. So I'm sure the two of you have lots to talk about.
Great.
Well, I just want to say, first and foremost, I want to mention that President Maduro was very, very supportive of Colombia and mentioned Venezuela and Colombia in the same sentence at every point in terms of resisting the U.S. And even in the kind of Bolivarian sense, spoke of Gran Colombia, like sort of the idea and what was instantiated under Simón Bolívar, which included also Venezuela as well in this much larger republic. I think this kind of union that you were saying, this ideal, which would have been a union of all the territories that were liberated by Simón Bolívar, is still in the conception of the Venezuelans, not necessarily as a political entity, but as a revolutionary entity, as sort of like Nuestra America, kind of, you know, fighting together and struggling together. And he said that Venezuela would support Colombia if it was attacked, and Colombia, he's sure, would support Venezuela as well. The one thing I wanted to ask you is, I've been doing some research here and reporting on a very, I think, disturbing trend, which I don't know if many of our viewers know, but it has come to our attention over the past few months that the drug cartels, the real drug cartels, in probably alliance with Western intelligence, are sending their members to the Ukrainian army to train, to learn drone warfare, to participate in the battle against the Russian Federation, and then to come back with those skills that have already, by the way, been employed and deployed against Colombian military personnel, Mexican military personnel, and others. I wanted to ask you, How do you see sort of Colombia today in the world system, in the developing multipolar world? And how much of that can you attribute to President Petro? And how much of that are we going to see in the coming years, do you think, as this election comes up in the coming months?
Well, again, for years before Petro became president, Colombia was the beachhead of the United States in the hemisphere. I forget which U.S. politician said that, Plan Colombia was part of, the main goal was to project U.S. power throughout the region from Colombia. And recall, of course, that the U.S. intervened in Colombia in 1903 to create Panama so it could steal the Panama Canal, right? Build and take possession of the Panama Canal. So this has been a longstanding thing where the U.S. has tried to use Colombia as its, to advance its interest in the hemisphere. Now that, largely ended when Petro became president. But, and so Colombia is in a different place in the world now. Now Colombia represents a more progressive country that does not want to project U.S. power in the world, that does not want to be part of NATO, that does not want to train other death squads as Colombia used to do, that does not want to be trained by Israel as the military and paramilitaries were before Petro. But at the same time, in a few years, you can't uproot all those forces, right-wing forces that exist in Colombia. They still are out there in large numbers. So I can't tell you what the future is going to look like. The goal of the U.S. and of the right-wing in Colombia is to bring it backwards to where it was before, where it would be essentially the Israel of Latin America. And that will be the struggle to prevent that from happening. And it will be a very difficult struggle. But that's really what is at stake here. And it will also depend not just what happens in Colombia with the elections, but what also happens in Venezuela.
Yeah.
If the revolution is able to hold on there. So I think the future is very uncertain right now.
Well, the struggle continues as we all know and understand. And I think one final point from me. You've been involved in Latin America for many decades. You've seen it. You've been on the ground. I know you were close. You were close in those early days with the Sandinistas, right there in the early days of their victory. Close to Ortega. Close to so many people throughout the continent. And throughout really the hemisphere, the non-Anglo-Saxon hemisphere, which is the majority of the Americas. Let me ask you, with this uncertainty in mind, do you see also other countries in the hemisphere being targeted? Do you see U.S. foreign policy maybe trying to distance itself from conflicts further abroad and trying to focus more on the hemisphere? What are your predictions, if you could make any?
Well, first of all, I think every country is going to be targeted in the hemisphere. They are all the time. You have gains in a place like Bolivia, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's an intervention, and then the countries move back into the sphere of the United States, which did happen to Bolivia, for example. Yep. You see Argentina has gone in and out of the U.S. sphere. It's now well within it. This is going to be a constant battle for a long time. The U.S. will not let go of this hemisphere. Now, you ask, are they going to pull back from other conflicts to focus on this hemisphere? And my answer is, I don't know. There seemed to be a moment where that would be the case with, you saw the Pentagon announced it was going to try to lower the confrontation with China and Russia. You saw, of course, at least the announced ceasefire in Gaza. But last night, Israel killed 102 people in Gaza, right? That's as much as they were killing at the height of the war. So where are we at with that? And they could only do that with U.S. support. Trump said he wanted to be friends with Putin, and he met with Putin in Alaska. Then he was going to meet with him in Europe, and then he backed out of that. And now he's saying, oh, I'm not going to let Russia even have Crimea. So, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, the problem is the U.S. wants the whole world. And I don't see it pulling. I guess it, in the end, I don't see it pulling back from anywhere. Mm-hmm. It wants to be at war all the time, you know, and it was incredible that, you know, Trump, who ran on a policy to at least pull out of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. You saw recently he said we're involved in 8 conflicts now, and I'm going to get us into a 9th. I mean, he's totally gone the other way now, right? Where he is now proud to be a neocon. He is a proud neocon now. He is the neocon's neocon. I mean, the idea of invading Venezuela, I mean, even under George W. Bush, that was not a serious consideration.
No, not at all.
I mean, I looked high and low for any other instance in history where we deployed a carrier strike group in a wartime posture to Southcom, and we have never done this.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think we've done it to the Dominican Republic, which, of course, is in the Caribbean in 1965. Did a similar thing to Panama in 1989, but not, you know, not, it didn't look like this, but.
Right.
Even under Reagan, who supported death squads throughout Central America, who supported the Contras, the best he could do is a very little invasion of Grenada, right? I mean, this is just not something the U.S. has done for 100 years, right? We used to do it all the time with gunboat diplomacy, right? We were invading everyone every time, you know, in the hemisphere all the time, Nicaragua, Haiti, Dominican Republic, you know. What we're seeing before our eyes is something we really haven't seen since the days of, you know, Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson. So, but it shows how much capitalism is in crisis, right? The veneer of freedom and democracy and human rights and sovereignty of other countries, it's just thrown out the window. There is not even a pretense that we think of that anymore. And this blowing up of these boats in the Caribbean, which I think has now killed over 50 people without due process, to say the least. I mean, these are just murders, just pure and simple murders. And you can say these people are anything you want, but in a world of law and due process, you got to prove it in a court of law that they are before you punish them. And by the way, even in the U.S. and states that have capital punishment, drug trafficking would not get you the death penalty. So none of this has any, you know, legitimacy in law or morality. But Trump is making it clear in a lot of his statements he does not care.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't you think that's part of the point, to kind of usurp and subvert law and kind of law morality? I mean, even we mentioned the ceasefire, even just like legal terms such as ceasefire, they're changing the meaning of those terms. I mean, Israel bombed for 14 hours last night and then said, all right, ceasefire is back in place.
Yeah, there's no problem with the ceasefire.
That's not how ceasefires work. So we're changing laws. We're changing what words mean, like – we're just in an incredibly upside down time.
We live in the dystopic world that Orwell had talked about, right? Where words don't mean what they mean. As you say, ceasefire means you cease, I fire. I didn't make that up. I saw someone else say that. That's beautiful. we live, as you say, in an upside down world, where language means nothing. The law is completely impotent to stop the worst crimes. And I think, again, I think you have to go back to Gaza. I think where, you know, with that the U.S. and Israel are willing to do the horrible, terrible things in Gaza on video, right, before the whole world. I think when that Rubicon was crossed, anything goes now. And that was the point, as you say. The point was to show we can do anything to anyone at any time, and no one's going to stop us from doing it. And Petro's been one of the few leaders who has raised the specter of an international force to go in and protect the people of Gaza.
That's
which is something that should be done. I support him on that. And that's, again, what makes him enemy number one to the United States.
We've got Petro calling for international brigades to go to Gaza. We've got Maduro calling for international brigades to go to Venezuela. It's just an international solidarity movement happening.
The Abraham Lincoln brigades are back, baby.
They're back, baby. We're ready. We're ready. Yeah.
Bain 2.0, you know, get your grab your guns, ladies and gentlemen. So
let me ask you, Dan, as we conclude here, any final thoughts, any final parting words you want to tell our viewers? And I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon, but anything that you have on your mind?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's this curse. I've seen it attributed to the Chinese, some people to Ireland. May you live in interesting times, right? And we live in interesting times. And it's a curse because interesting can often be terrible times. You know, we're seeing terrible things in our streets with ICE and in Gaza and in Colombia and Venezuela, you know, that we haven't seen in our lifetime. But it's also a blessing in the sense that you can be part of that struggle. We are fighting evil. And I don't use that term loosely, and I am using it in a biblical way. You know, Netanyahu said that this is a battle of light against darkness. But of course, he was wrong as to who represented light and darkness. But he is right about that.
Mm-hmm.
And we are the light. And people like Gustavo Petro are the light, and Venezuela and Cuba and Nicaragua and the people of Palestine are the light, and we need to support them. And we have that privilege to live in times where the stakes are high and we're fighting for something means something. And it's not times any of us have chosen. As Gandalf says, nobody chooses those times, to live in such times, right? But they are upon us. So fight, resist, and you'll win, lose, or draw. You'll have a much more interesting and fulfilling life by doing so. If I may, and this may be sound totally silly to you, but since I'm on a, you know, Lord of the Rings and similar things, the other line I think of is Dumbledore, who tells Harry Potter, this is a time to do what is right and not what is easy. Mm-hmm. And I think those are very profound words. And I think about that all the time. I mean, the things that I am going to now have to do in my life, representing Petro, you know, and possibly getting the federal government down, you know, down upon me. Not naive about that. You know, not doing it would be the easy thing. You know, I could sit around here with my cat and have a very nice life and watch the Steelers on Monday, you know. But it is the time to do what is right. And and that means that you have to choose the more difficult road. I don't know. Maybe I was too philosophical there, but there you go. That's my final words to everyone.
I love it. I love it. As always, a wellspring of wisdom. And we're so thankful for all the hard work in your many years of activism and struggle. And I know that you will give many more to it.
I appreciate it. I appreciate both of you. I always enjoy our conversation, and I always enjoy this opportunity. Thank you to our viewers.
We'll let you go, and we'll close it out for you. I know you have a hard stop at 45. So
thank you. I will go.
We'll talk soon. Today.
Take care. Take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And I know Chris wants to get back to drinking at the pub with Borut. So take care.
No, I'm going to give you an update. Okay. I got to give everybody updates.
All right,
hold
give
on.
Us the update.
Also, because the battery on this is slowly fading, but I figured now that, you know, we're towards the end, I'll put up the light so you can at least see me better. So today we had the Dialogue of Fakes 3.0 conference, and it was fantastic. It was a conference hosted by Dialogue and GFCN, and it was a great opportunity to speak about fake news, disinformation, misinformation, AI, the role of states and non-state actors in shaping the news and information sphere. Also talking about historical revisionism. And I had the wonderful opportunity to have lunch with Maria Zakharova, who's the spokesperson of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Russian Federation. And then she took the stage afterwards, and we were able to hear from her, you know, many, many wise and I would say very spot on analyses of what's going on in the world today, both not only historically, but also in the contemporary situation. And I was able to give a speech where I spoke at length about the need to for all of us to be. And I spoke on the same topic with George Galloway on stage at Nizhny Novgorod in the World Youth Festival. I said we need to be, quote unquote, digital partisans. This is the information space is a war zone, and it's the largest war zone that has ever existed in human history. It will continue to be that because it's a war for the hearts and minds of people all around the world. And the real weapon of mass destruction today is information, because information can kill more and can bring down more than any weapon of mass destruction. So I just want people to understand that we're in a profound and transformative period of time, and that what we do here and what we do in terms of bringing the truth and bringing a correct analysis of many of the contemporary problems and situations around the world is critical. It's critical. It's necessary. And we must continue to support this effort. And the important thing is to create a network of people who are doing this and to really change things from below. Because the top-down approach, which we've seen in the mainstream media, we've seen it in the U.S., I mean, we know where this is headed, and we know where this is, where this has led us for so many decades. And of course, those systems and structures are beholden to certain interests and elite character of the ruling class that ultimately is very much about the perpetuation of their power, and serves their interests, both military, economic, social, cultural, you name it. So that's all to say that we are fighting against a massive structure, and we must continue to support all of us in this war, and all of you have a part to play in that.
Well, thank you, Chris. And that's a clip. So thank you for the clip. Anybody else reach your chance? You can leave whatever you need to. Chris, I know you guys are dying and you don't have all the time, but thank you for the level of insight. International affairs you provide is second to none. I starred this for you, Chris. Hi, Sarah and Chris. I would like to express my gratitude to Chris today at the forum. He is a wonderful person.
Thank you so much.
Last week's show was probably my most favorite stream I've ever did that didn't involve an interview or a guest. That was awesome.
That was great. Yeah. That was a great show.
And it was also a record for us. And thanks again, Will. Thank you for always being here. I'll let you get back to drinking. Guys, don't forget about Dan's book, Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change. Pay attention to Dan. He is representing President Gustavo Petro. And make sure you keep watching our stream so I can get the ad revenue so I can get out of here when it's my turn, because it's coming very soon. Hearing what you're doing, what Dan's doing, I'm like, I better get the hell out of here before I'm going to be next. So thank you, guys. And we will see you all for a normal stream on Sunday and your weekly update if Chris is not in a pub again.
No, but I'll be somewhere else more cool. So we'll discuss it then.
Thank you, guys. And we will talk to you on Sunday.
Take care, everyone.